We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 261. It's another split with the minor league Marlins.
Well, you don't like splits? It's hard to sweep a two-game set, just like it's hard to sweep a doubleheader, right? Isn't that what the saying is?
I don't think the same principle applies there. Wow. When you don't play the games on the same day.
Oh, I thought it was just because it's two games, you know, back-to-back. Didn't really matter if it's on the same day, different day, where you are. Yeah, Yankees can't win those two games. And the Marlins apparently have a phenomenal bullpen. They're really good. Really good.
Right.
The whole pitching staff, phenomenal.
You'd never know that the Marlins were tied for the worst bullpen ERA coming into this two-game series, because they completely shut down the Yankees in extra, you know, through an extra inning game, and also in that game on Wednesday night.
Well, this might be the curse of having the worst bullpen in baseball, because when we played the Indians, they also had the worst bullpen in baseball, and they did pretty well against us too. So apparently if you have the worst bullpen in baseball and you go to play the Yankees, it's going to turn around. That's like the breaking point, and you start to pitch well. So good for them.
Can you believe that A-Rod's presence on the field in full uniform, warming up, instructing Andujar, and down there with batting practice, did not fire the team up?
Yeah, no, that's surprising. Really surprising. I wonder how many scripted little anecdotes he had to say to the team, and then just wouldn't talk to anybody after that because he didn't know what to say. I don't have anything left to say, guys. That's it. That's all I got in my pocket. Please don't talk to me any longer. Talk to my guys.
Do you find it funny that he went full uniform? Not full uniform. He didn't have the jersey top on, but he had the pants, the socks, the warm-up top on, everything.
You gotta be flexible. You gotta be limber. And, you know, it's nice. Those pants stretch. So I think he's going to do it.
Probably had the sunflower seeds in the back pocket.
Oh, 100%.
He had the eye black on, the sunglasses, even though it's indoors.
He's like, I'm going to do this.
Like, just maybe if I look the part, Boone will think I'm on the team and put me on the bench, and maybe I'll get a pinch hitting opportunity late in the game.
You see, I think he's just trying to intimidate Boone. I think that was part of the, you know, look, this is what I would look like if I were the manager, just so you know.
That is true. If A-Rod ended up being a manager, you know, he would just be doing that every single day for a team, just out there taking infield practice with the guys.
Yeah, I'm good with when we go to Florida. I don't know why when we go to Florida, all these special guests have to start coming into our clubhouse and poisoning it, like Alex Rodriguez and Jacoby Ellsbury. Can we just stay out?
I don't think Ellsbury's a special guest.
Can we just stay out of Florida, please, until after spring training? I feel like the Yankees should not go to the state of Florida. It's been a bad place to play baseball so far this year.
Well, that's where all the injured guys are, or where the old retirees are.
Yeah, we don't want to be there. Spring training, that's great. That's where they're going to be. We'll see them there. They'll do their little camps. They'll do their little drills. They'll put their uniform back on. They'll feel important, and it'll be great. They'll do some mentoring, you know. But I don't want injured players to start leaking into the clubhouse, and completely disrupting what's happening, because that's what Ellsbury did. And I feel like ever since then, things have just not been right.
That's like last year. Do you remember the West Coast trip from hell?
Of course I do.
When Chris Carter couldn't catch the ball at first base because his eyes were closed, and then everything was bizarro world after that.
Yeah, Billy Bean poisoned the locker room.
This year, it's Jacoby Ellsbury walks into the clubhouse, poisons the clubhouse, and it's bizarro world from there on.
Yeah, because it really hasn't changed. It hasn't really changed much since then. We've had more people going on the disabled list. We've played more, you know, sporadic baseball. It's been a wild ride since Jacoby came into the building.
Yeah, where was Ellsbury when Jay Happ got Coxsackie?
Somewhere. He was somewhere. Lurking in the shadows. He was somewhere. He was working deals with the clubhouse guys. I don't know what he was doing, but he was doing something.
So you mentioned the injuries. Hopefully the Yankees are starting to get healthy by September 15th, which is the last regular season Bronx Pinstripes event. Why don't you tell people about that?
Yeah, this is the last one of the season. Definitely come out. We are starting to plan for 2019 now. I can't believe it, because the schedule already came out. So we're circling some dates and looking into that. But this September 15th is the last one. It's versus the Blue Jays. And currently it's a 4 o'clock game. It's a flex game. So we will let you know if it changes at all. But it is $64. That gets you the T-shirt. the game ticket. We're back in 205 where we belong. And we'll be doing a pregame party at the dugout before the game, probably about 2 hours before the game. So definitely get your tickets and come out, hang out with the crew. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of really good people in this. We've had just so many people that repeat each event and have come to, you know, a few people that have come to all of the events and a lot of people that have come to many of the events too. So it's awesome to get to know everybody and see familiar faces and then also some new faces. So to encourage more people and to encourage some new faces, we're doing the promotion for captains. And if you are a captain of your group, that means if you are the organizer of your group for 10 or more people, you're getting your ticket for free. We got your ticket as a thank you for bringing more people out. That's kind of the whole point of this. You know, we want to build a this community of people that go to the Yankee games, sit in the same section and just have a great time. And that's what's happening so far. And then if you have five people or more, you get half off your ticket. So send a text message out, get into the message apps and do what you got to do and get your people to the game. It's a lot of fun. But you can go onto the fan shop and get those tickets right now. So that's shop.bronxpinstripes.com.
Yeah. Or if people are just looking to go to a game for free, they just go on Tinder or something like that and gather nine people, invite nine people to the game off Tinder, and then you get your ticket free.
There you go. I didn't know you could do that, but let's do that. That's a good idea, too. I'll make sure to put you all together as well.
All right. So be honest. Did you have a little sparkle in your eye? Did you get a little too excited when the Red Sox lost three games in a row and the Yankees cut it to seven back in the loss column?
Well, I was looking at the score yesterday in the fifth inning when the Red Sox were losing and the Yankees were winning. And I was like, ooh, we could actually cut this down to eight. Or this could actually get down to a manageable number at some point in the near future.
It would have been seven. I mean, seven games, six in the loss column,
right,
which is the number of games the Yankees have left with the Red Sox.
So yeah, and I'm not looking at exactly that number to say, oh, well, this is how many we have. So if we win all of them, we can get there. No. I'm just trying to cut that number down and keep cutting that number down. So look, I think they've cut the number down a little bit, and they just get to keep doing that. So yes, I did get excited. And I'm still, honestly, maybe it's completely delusional, but I'm still, I still have that glimmer of hope for first place because we're seeing the Red Sox start to play a little bit different. You know, maybe that will turn into a, you know, 8 out of 10 losing streak or something like that. I think it's very possible still. And the schedule, not the very near future schedule, but for the remaining of the season, the Yankees have a very, very favorable schedule still. So
here's the problem with that. I agree with you. The Red Sox are not, I could see the Red Sox maybe hitting a little bit of a speed bump. They have Chris Sale on the DL. They have a tough schedule right now, but the Yankees aren't playing well.
No, they're not.
So you can't catch the Red Sox just because the Red Sox may falter and play closer to 500 for a couple week stretch, that you still have to play really well. And you have to win 70% of your games if you're going to catch the Red Sox. And the Yankees are not doing that.
Well, I mean, they did sweep the Blue Jays, and then they won one out of two. So they won four out of five, so they're over 70%.
You know what I mean. I mean, I understand there's injuries. The Yankees, with Didi being placed on the DL, what did we say? I put it in here. 46% of the Yankees' home run production from 2017 is now on the disabled list when you have Didi, Judge, and Sanchez all out. And as you made a note, not one person from the starting infield is out there right now, and we don't count Greg Bird.
No, yeah, Chase Headley, not so much here. Not that that's a problem, but we've upgraded second base and third base, but... Yeah, no, it's a different team right now. It's just that's the bottom line. It's a different team. They don't have their power out there. They don't have their superstars. They don't have their chemistry guys in the game every day. And I think that makes a huge difference when you're either sitting in the dugout and cheering your guys on. You're still there like Judge is, and you know, making sure that he's there for his guys. It's just different when you're not playing as well. So, you know, they're going through major adversity right now. There's just no other way to put it because they're not the same team. They're just not the same team. So the confidence is not there that they're going to score runs late in the game, or that if a ball is hit to right field and a guy's trying to go first or third, that guy's going to either stop because there's a cannon in right field, or he's going to get thrown out at third base. Like, there's no confidence all around the field, whether it's at the plate or on the defensive side. It's a problem, but it's a problem that's in front of them.
So what you're saying is you agree with Pedro Martinez.
It's annoying that Pedro is relevant again. Hey Pedro, stop tweeting and just go fix Severino again, please. Can we do that?
Right. Where's can you send some text messages to Severino? Yeah. Maybe, hey, move your hand positioning or don't do this. Maybe do that so you can get back to dominating. But on Twitter, Pedro said the Yankees don't seem to have the energy of a winning team. I understand some key players are injured, but they don't seem to be hustling out there. I have a lot of respect for the Yankees and the players they have, but right now they're not the same team that played the Red Sox early in the season. The team that the Yankees have in the bench should beat beat teams like the Marlins.
This is how Pedro's comment just loses complete relevancy and goes away from me, because one, they're not the same team that they played when the Red Sox were in. No, they're not. They're not the same team. Literally not the same team. Different people. Totally different people. And you're talking about the bench? Please, our bench is complete trash right now. Besides Mr. Torres, with all due respect, the rest of the bench is complete trash. There's nobody there.
Right, and it was highlighted in that extra inning game where Boone was deciding between Shane Robinson and Torres to pinch hit in the ninth inning because he had already had Voit, who's no better. But the bench is made up of Toe, Voit, Robinson, and Higgy. Higgy's the backup catcher, so you don't really even count the backup catcher as a bench player. And I had someone tweet me as hilarious. Got to give him a shout out, Mike F. Yank the Mike on Twitter. He called it Jaywalker's Row.
It's not a good, it's a bad bench. And, you know, like, you look at these guys, and Voit obviously just came over in the trade from the Cardinals for our boy Chasen Shreve. And then Sugar Shane Robinson has, you know, been on this team 15 times, I think, and maybe released and picked up and then brought back. And I get him confused and the other guy that was up and down for like 50 times. I think he's on the Orioles now. But the Torres is like, I'm fine with Torres pinch hitting because he makes good contact every single time. Like he's a tough at bat. Like I got no problem with that. That is not a bad situation for me. I'm fine with throwing in Torres in a pinch hit spot. But the rest of the bench, he's a bench player. He's a good bench player. The rest of those guys, not so much. And not to take anything away from Higgy, because he's just put in here because he's depth at this point.
No, I agree with you. Torres is a good bench player, but when your backup outfielder is Shane Robinson, who in the month of August has played 14 games and only has one hit, and then your other backup player is Luke Voit, who, let's be honest, does not belong in the major leagues and can only play one position, and that's first base. That doesn't really give you much versatility.
No, and we don't really know who that guy is either. You know, I feel like he just came over, and we know he's a first baseman. And he was,
I think they look at Voit and see a big body, a big beefy man out there, and think, oh, this dude might hit a ball 400 feet.
But he doesn't. You look at his numbers. In AAA when he was with the Cardinals, he didn't hit that many home runs. So
what is he there for? What is the purpose? What is the point?
Well, they needed another first baseman, I guess, and they can't put Neil Walker over there because Neil Walker now has to play 15 positions, and they're all in the
infield.
But
if you call up Tyler Wade, then Neil Walker doesn't have to be the backup second baseman. He can be the backup first baseman.
I mean, I agree with you with the Tyler Wade thing. I don't understand why Tyler Wade's not playing in the major leagues right now. Like, to me, put him in there, you could fill two spots because he can play the outfield. He's an athlete. That kid is super athletic, probably one of the better athletes in the organization. And he was playing it in spring training. He was playing it early in the season. They had him in center field. So, you know, I have no idea why Tyler Wade can't be relied on as that guy. If they had Neil Walker going out to right field, why not have a guy like Tyler Wade up here who can
be more Wade's going to give you much better defense.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's
going to
give you better outfield defense than either Robinson or Neil Walker.
I think so. I mean,
And tremendous speed that we saw earlier in the season.
But they don't think, the organization certainly does not think that Tyler Wade is a better right fielder right now than Shane Robinson. Otherwise, he would be on this team.
That's asinine.
But there's no other reason.
Shane Robinson is I think we said this last time, he doesn't even belong in AAA.
He's on this team right now because he's a backup, because he has outfield experience. That's the reason he's there. He's not there for anything else.
He belongs in the league that Ricky Henderson played in when he was like 49 years old.
Didn't Ricky Henderson, which one was that? Oh, like an independent ball?
It was like an independent league out in California. That's where Shane Robinson belongs.
You just said he belongs in the same league as Ricky Henderson. I can't even say that.
When he's 49 years old.
I don't care. I can't say that. I can't put those two names in the same sentence. You got a Hall of Famer here. What are you talking
about? Sorry, Ricky. I love you, Ricky.
I got a starting lineup right in front of me. I'm looking at it from like 1985.
For what?
The starting lineup. Those little the little figurines, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, he's a terrible player. He shouldn't be on the team. And when you're looking at the bench, it's overwhelmingly bad. It's not what you want by any means. And thankfully, Torres is up, and he's a little bit of a glimmer of hope. God, that man gives me hope.
Let's talk about some of the waiver stuff that's been going on this week and why the Yankees are maybe not getting involved. So the Nationals sold off everybody. Daniel Murphy to the Cubs. Matt Adams back to the Cardinals. Harper was claimed by a mystery team. There were some reports that it was the Dodgers, but no trade was worked out for him. And everyone, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, why haven't the Yankees done anything? They're in a bad position because the waiver priority goes on record. And the Yankees, despite the fact they're in second place, have the second best record in Major League Baseball. So they're picking, or their priority in the waivers is second to last. So all of these guys aren't even getting to the Yankees. However, that doesn't mean they can't work something out with a team like the Blue Jays for Curtis Granderson or for Danny Valencia, because those guys have totally cleared waivers and can be worked out a deal with any team.
Here's the problem I have with people like pining for a guy like Curtis Granderson. First of all, Curtis Granderson is in the twilight, like the very distant twilight of his career at this point. He has some pop. He could play some outfield, but he really doesn't add much to you. He's going to strike out a ton. You know, when he went to the Dodgers at the end of last year, he was awful. He was a hole out there. He did not produce at all with the bat. And I got to believe at this point, like, yeah, the guy keeps himself in great shape. Probably one of the nicest guys in baseball. So I have a hard time talking any kind of crap about Curtis Granderson because he's truly one of the great guys of baseball. But I just don't think he adds really much to this team. So if people want to go out there and trade somebody
really
away for Curtis Granderson, I just don't think he adds much. I think you bring a guy up like Tyler Wade and, you know, you're not going to get the power. But again, you're going to strike out a ton with Curtis Granderson. And Tyler Wade at least gives you a little bit of upside with what he can do and flexibility where he can go. Curtis Granderson can't play anywhere else besides right field. Like, that's it.
Curtis Granderson has a 772 OPS right now for the Blue Jays, and Shane Robinson has a 405 OPS.
Again, I'm not comparing him to Shane Robinson. I don't know why Shane Robinson is
That's what you're talking
here.
About right now, because your backup outfielder, your backup right field, all Shane Robinson done is play right field, and he can't hit, and he can barely field. At least Curtis Granderson can give you some offense. And if it's not Curtis Granderson, why not Valencia?
I mean, this is why
I agree with you.
But again, this is why Tyler Wade should be there.
Tyler Wade. Give me someone from the minor leagues other than Shane Robinson. I'm in agreement with you. But with the Yankees just sticking with Shane Robinson, from an outside perspective, you'd say, oh, they must have no other option. And that's not true. They do have other options.
They do have other options. They absolutely do. And, you know, who knows if Cashman went to the Blue Jays and said, this is who I'll give you for Curtis Granderson. And they said, no, I want X player. And it was way more than Brian Cashman wanted to give up. Maybe that's the case.
You may be right. Because the Blue Jays might be looking at the Yankees and saying, hey, you guys are desperate. I'm going to hold you to the fire. And if that's the case, fine. Don't give up too much for Curtis Granderson right now. But do something. Do something else.
I really don't understand why Tyler Wade's not on the team. Because, like, that's a guy who has major league experience and can help this team right now. He can absolutely help the team. And they have a, you know, Pedro's talking about this energy problem and how they're looking at, he's looking at his NC hustle. First of all, I think Pedro just talks in generalities and he's like trying to make some headlines because when he speaks them, like he sounds like an idiot sometimes. But when he's trying to tweet these things out that are controversial, he'll get more play. You know, I think that's part of it. Like the lack of hustle, I'm not really seeing that anymore. We've seen it a couple times in isolated incidents. He's playing off of old stuff. Like he's just trying to get in the headlines. But you have a guy like Tyler Wade. If you're trying to add that, like that's a guy who's got a lot of energy, who has a lot of chemistry with the guys that are currently on the team. To me, it's a no brainer. You add a guy like that to come up. And yeah, I think he's going to come up, you know, when the rosters expand. But why not just do it now? Why not? It's baffling to me why they're not doing it.
Do you think that the Yankees are not calling up Wade because he looks like Jacoby Ellsbury and some people in that clubhouse might get confused that it is Jacoby Ellsbury and then they will be infected with the Jacoby Ellsbury virus?
Possibly. Maybe that's why they're not doing it while they're in Florida. So they're like, you know, everybody's expecting Ellsbury to walk around the corner. If they see Wade, it could be confusing because we did see that in spring training. They look, you put sunglasses on those two guys and you see them in the dugout. They look identical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough. It's a tough position there. You got to mess with the psyche.
Who do you hate more, A-Rod talking or Pedro talking? I can't tell. It sounds like you hate both of them.
Well, I hate A-Rod talking way more. I feel like I expect it from Pedro because I have a different hatred for Pedro, even though I don't really even hate him anymore. He's just not on my radar at this point. So yeah, it's A-Rod. I can't stand A-Rod. And I feel like so many people have come around with me now and they've realized I've had some, I won't name names here, but at the last outing, I have had some very, very pro A-Rod guys come up to me and be like, you know what? You're right. He's awful. Well,
he's awful in the full game broadcast. He got exposed. He is a studio guy where he only talks for the 5 minutes before a game and the 5 minutes after the game, and he can read his one-liners that he's prepared for weeks, done, boom, out. But when he has to actually go off the cuff and be there for a full nine innings, it's not good.
No, it's not good. And I tried to tell everybody that these were just horrible, horrible red-produced scripted lines, and everybody's like, no, they're great. It's Alex being funny. And no, it's not. It's somebody else being funny.
He doesn't know how to be funny.
I'm pretty sure his daughters are writing the jokes for him, which are good for them. You know, that's good job. I'm glad it's a family thing, but you know, he's not good. He's just not good.
His daughters,
yes.
The extra inning win on Tuesday night, that's a game that the Yankees are lucky to even have. So we're saying they split with the Marlins, but they were lucky to win that game because the Marlins totally gave it away, 0 for 10 with runners in scoring position. They completely gave away two golden scoring opportunities, or do you want to say the Yankees escaped them in the ninth inning with Chad Green and then in the 11th inning with AJ Cole? But you see why the Marlins are a minor league team. I call them the minor league Marlins for a reason. They waste opportunities with runners in scoring position like that. They make small mistakes. Like last night, they tried to let the Yankees back in the game. They have outfielders missing cutoff men. They don't do things right, yet they were still able to win a game from the Yankees here. And then also for the season series, they split with them 2-2 in the four-game season series.
Yeah, I mean, the game one was pretty crazy with the way it was a long game, obviously, because it went into extra innings, but it was a roller coaster of emotions for what was a 1-1 game for a while, and then a 2-1 game, and then you know you have AJ Cole come in and you know get into a bases loaded jam all by himself. It was nice of him to do that, and then get out of it, which was just completely mind blowing. I'm sitting there like in complete shock that AJ Cole got out of the jam that he did. And you know, and when you're looking at the pecking order, it's definitely in question. Although I must say, Tommy Kahnle has not pitched great since he's been up. We saw him pitch pretty bad last Saturday at the game, and then you know, even last night he gave up some runners
he
that were
came in
that
through one pitch and gave it an immediate double.
Yeah, so
on the first pitch, RBI double.
But he did close it out. You know, at the end of the first game and pitched well because it looked like he was a pissed off Tommy Kahnle. So it's hard to say that you know the pecking order. You know, he's not the same guy as he was last year. So it's hard to say something about the pecking order. But I will say this is that AJ Cole. There were a lot of guys unavailable that we didn't realize, I think, too. David Robertson, I don't think a lot of the fans realized that he was unavailable until we're like, well, David Robertson must not be available because he's not warming up. We haven't seen him get up, anything.
He's got a, quote, tender shoulder.
Right. So, you know, it looks like AJ Cole was the guy at that point. I mean, he's basically, you know, when they traded away Adam Warren, it's insert AJ Cole in Adam Warren's spot. He's not so much just the long guy anymore. He's not that guy that is going to come in and do, you know, throw multiple innings because they need to get through. He's coming in other situations now too. And then when he gets in trouble, nobody's warming up. We're just going to let AJ Cole get out of this. If he gives up a home run, maybe two, we're going to let him go out there and maybe give up a third home run. Look, Boone is driving some people mad with the way that he sticks with guys. And I think at this point in what we've seen with him, by far the biggest stumbling block that I have with him is that he has way too much faith in guys for getting out of trouble. And he stays way too long with guys, whether it's a starter when they're gassed or a reliever when they're not supposed to be in that damn game. And it's clear that they have nothing.
But is the fact that he left Cole out there a product of him just having too much confidence, too much unjustified confidence in Cole, or he knows he has nobody else to back him up behind him in the bullpen? And he was saving Chapman for a possible save situation, and we'll get to Chapman in a second, but the bullpen's thin. Like you just said, the Robertson wasn't available. We didn't really understand that at the time. Canely has been up and down all season. So what is he to do in that situation? I get in the moment people flipping out. People were blasting Boone because he was leaving Cole in there. And they're saying just because Cole escaped trouble doesn't make the decision correct. But what is the alternative there?
No, I mean, when you find out, when we all found out that D-Rob was unavailable and that, yeah, you're saving Chapman for a save situation, which I understand, there's nobody else. I mean, the bullpen is extremely thin at that point. So, yes, I see what happened at this when you're looking back and you know what the options were. He didn't have very many options. The fact that A.J. Cole got out of that was an absolute miracle. I can't believe it. I look back and I watch the video of that inning, and I have no idea how he got out of that inning.
It was a completely lucky win.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, when Chad Green comes in and he gets in, he came in, I think it was a first and third, he got into a first and third situation, then the bases were loaded. You know, you could expect a guy like Chad Green to potentially get out of that with his stuff, right? Because he's got that, he has it in him. He's got last year they said he's got the best stuff in the bullpen. Like the bullpen guys were saying this. So
high spin rate fastball.
Yeah, you could see that. You could see how he could get out of a situation like that. So that one didn't surprise me as much. And I think he was probably the most surprised if you saw the look on his face when he was walking off, like a lot of relief in his face, but
got away with one there. Yeah. He got angry there. Once it got first and third, you could tell he ramped it up a little bit because his fastball usually lives around 96 and I saw him touch 98
and there was tail on it too. He had some good movement on that ball and more movement than I've seen in him coming in. So we need to piss him off more.
Did you hear I believe it was on the Yes broadcast with Michael Kay saying that Romine forced Green to throw a couple changeups in his previous outing to just get him off only fastball slider. And then or maybe it was not his previous outing, but an earlier outing this season. And since he started throwing a changeup a little bit, it's actually made his fastball even better.
Weird. I feel like I feel like I could walk in and be a pitching coach right now. It's not that hard of a concept. I mean, Austin Romine gets it. Like, just show the other pitches.
Just throw the pitch. Just, doesn't matter. If I don't care. 5 feet out of the zone. Just throw the pitch.
Yes. Just throw the pitch. Just show that you will throw it. That's it. That's all you have to do. When you have a fastball like some of these guys do, all you have to do is show a third pitch. It's not that difficult. It really isn't. Just learn how to throw it over the plate occasionally. And even if you don't,
it doesn't need to be. Yeah, it needs to be near the plate because if it's over the plate, it might get blasted.
It's not a novel concept. It's not a new concept. It's not anything different than people have been doing for years and years and years in baseball. If you show a third pitch and you have a freaking live 99 mile an hour fastball, it puts more doubt in the back of the mind of the batter. It's science. It's easy. Let's just do that. My God.
The science, bitch.
It's crazy how you know when. But I like the thing is that I think these guys get so comfortable throwing, you know, their two pitches, and they know that they have they could throw that on a dime, and they just lack the confidence to throw anything else, and they always have it in the back of their mind. Well, if I do throw that third pitch and I get beat on it, I'm getting beat on a pitch that I have no confidence in, and that's hard to swallow. So I understand the psyche of the guy at that time, but they got to understand the way that a game plan works with a batter and the way that they're scouting you. They're scouting you with two pitches. They're not scouting you for that third pitch. They're going to eat that. They're going to spit on that third pitch. But if they see it, there's doubt.
You can be a two-pitch pitcher if you're a one-inning reliever, though.
Yes.
Betances is a two-pitch pitcher, fastball, curveball, except his curveball is an A-plus pitch. And his fastball, when he can locate it, is an A-plus pitch. So you have two A-plus pitches, lights out for the other team if you're only a one-inning pitcher. Chad Green has an A-plus fastball, but he's got like a C-plus slider at best. So we're not talking about the same kind of two-pitch pitcher with Chad Green as we are with a guy like Betances.
No, not at all. And I mean, I think he could probably develop into that. And I think we saw flashes of that last year for sure. He could still be a dominant two pitch guy if he wanted to be. And again, like we've seen that, but right now he's not. So he needs to adjust with what's happening currently and how he's pitching. And you know, if Romine does that, like Romine knows what he's doing. When a guy like Romine says, you know, this is what I think we should do. You should probably listen to him. He's been around for a while. He's been in the organization forever and a day. He's just one of those rock solid backup guys who could call a good game. So I take a lot of stock in what Romine would say to a guy, and they should too. And obviously they did, and Chad Green did, and you know, now we're seeing some better production. So
Tanaka, just quickly on Tanaka, he looked pretty good. He gave up the one homer in the game. But do you think if he didn't have to come up the next inning, he would have gone past six innings?
Yeah, I think the National League definitely plays into that because he did look good, I thought. I thought he did look good. I think that, you know, he gave up that solo shot, but that's what Tanaka does. He's aggressive around the plate, especially with a guy that, you know, doesn't have any experience in the major leagues. Like, he's going to throw the ball and challenge him. And the kid just put a good swing on the bat, on the ball, and got a hold of it. But that's Tanaka's MO. He's aggressive when there's nobody on base, especially to a guy that doesn't have a long history in the major leagues.
And we got to see Tanaka bat with the bases loaded and not injure himself, which was...
He looked a lot more athletic this time, I got to tell you. He
did his pregame stretching.
Yeah, I mean, even...
A-Rod, it was because A-Rod was out there.
It must have been
pregame warm-ups.
Inspiration.
But, Tanaka, stretch your hamstrings.
Stretch those hamstrings and get that other... run down the line. Look, he looked actually very athletic. Even with his the way that he swung the bat, I thought he looked pretty athletic. He had some good hacks up there. And then running down the line, looked good. So, good for him.
He looked like a human running.
He looked like I'd say he looked closer to an athlete than a human.
You know who can't run right now? That's Chapman, because he's on the DL with knee and his knee issue, which we've known about since June, and the Yankees have been saying is not an issue since July, and Chapman has been saying is not an issue for 3-4 weeks, despite the fact that he comes in every other time and can't even locate the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying it's not an issue. I wonder if that means that I'm not feeling it or it's not affecting how I pitch currently. Because, you know, when he's been in over the past month, he hasn't been able to throw a strike, you know, but maybe two times. The guy has had more terrible outings than he's had good outings. And, you know, you look at that and you're like, something's going on. Something is not right. This is not the same guy. You know, if it's the knee, then let's take care of it. Let's take care of this knee because yes, it's been a problem since the beginning of the season. We've known about it for a long time. And you know, whether they downplayed it, whether they're just listening to Chapman a lot more because he's a veteran guy, you know, I know that happens. I don't know what the deal is there, but there's a, this is one of those injuries you're looking at compared to all the other injuries. And you're like, okay, that makes sense.
He has 7 walks in his last 4 innings pitch, which is over the course of 5 outings.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And that's basically since the beginning of August, which is starting with the Red Sox game that he blew. And we saw it. He did not look healthy. And the Yankees, after the game, was saying the knee is not an issue. And Chapman was saying the knee is not an issue. He's going to pitch through it. I get that. Maybe the only way to heal this is to rest. And they were trying to give him as much rest as possible. But to sit there and say that it's not an issue, I think is a bold-faced lie. It's clear this guy was not right. The velocity wasn't quite there, and also the location was way off. So if the knee's not an issue, what is the issue? He just forgot how to throw strikes?
Forgot how to throw hard too? Yeah, because he was throwing. I mean, this last one when clearly the knee was the issue, he was hitting 95 occasionally on his fastball when he threw one of his fastballs was 95 miles per hour. You could tell something wasn't right. You could tell that he was off.
Which is a changeup for Chapman.
Which is a changeup. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, look, I don't think he's been right for a while now because, you know, I know he gets sporadic, but there's no excuse for some of the outings that he's had. I mean, they've been just downright horrible. That's not a guy who's healthy.
But do you think the Yankees botched this?
Yeah, I think they did.
Putting him on the DL maybe... I think they could have put him on the DL near the All-Star break because there was an outing before the All-Star break or a point during before the All-Star break where they gave him a little extra time off in between outings, said that he's dealing with some knee tendonitis and we're going to give him a few days off and he's not going to pitch during the All-Star game, which will give him extra time off. Why couldn't they have just put him on the DL then and rest him for two, even if it took 3 or 4 weeks, at least you'd have Chapman back right now and healthy. Now we're in a case where it's the end of August. He's going to go on the DL for 10 days. Is that going to fix it? Who knows? He might need a month. He might need 3 weeks. Who knows? I'd rather do the 3 weeks in July than in August and September.
I mean, the thing that with tendonitis is that it comes back, and it can come back frequently. So if we were to put him on the DL earlier in the season, there's definitely nothing to say that, you know, that it wouldn't have just come right back. So that is something. If it's a lot of times tendonitis can be managed. And I think that's what was happening. I think that they were trying to manage it. And a lot of the management, when you're talking about tendonitis, because you can't see anything. It's not like the doctors can say, okay, well, yeah, I see this, you know, his tendonitis is getting better, unless they're looking at like inflammation. But that, you know, they got to go on what he's saying and how he feels at that point. And I think they tried to ride it as long as they could. But could there have been some preventative measures to kind of, you know, relax him up until this point? Yeah. But again, I think they're listening to him with an injury like this, because it's not really an injury. It's just a lingering thing. They have to listen to the player. And if the player's not telling them that it's a problem, then I don't know what you do.
You listen to the player for maybe two or three outings when he sucks, but when he sucks for four, five, six outings, then you don't listen to the player anymore. You say, we're putting you on the disabled list.
So when we're talking about like a tendonitis shot or tendonitis, like why not try to go in there, and if there is inflammation, let's, you know, give him a cortisone shot. Would have been good. I know you can only give X amount of those because you don't want to do too many, but something like that, that would, you know, alleviate the inflammation and make him feel better and last a little bit. And maybe they were waiting, if they were going to do it, give him a cortisone shot, that they were waiting towards the end of the season to do that, so that it could last towards, you know, into the remainder of the year and into the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know how those things are scheduled and how long they last, but I know you don't want to give too many of them. So that could be also a thing. They don't want to give it until they have to.
Boone said that they're going to mix and match with the closer. So we'll see Britton get a chance, Robertson maybe if his shoulder is better, and also Betances. But the Yankees acquired Britton a couple weeks ago, and it was the super bullpen, and now they are one guy down with Chapman and another guy who's kind of on the shelf with Robertson.
Yeah, and then insert AJ Cole as your Adam Warren substitute, and you're looking at a much worse bullpen. So hopefully there is some firepower on the way.
Everyone's killing Boone again for the Wednesday game for leaving Lance Lynn in there for 110 pitches, was it?
Yeah.
But you could tell he was getting gassed in the sixth inning. I get the logic. Boone was trying to push Lynn through the sixth inning because he was coming up in the seventh inning and he was going to pinch hit for him anyway. So he was trying to be a little cute there. He was trying to get away with one and not have to burn another guy in the bullpen. I understand that logic. But once you see him go out there for the sixth and not look the same, and he puts two runners on base, you have to start getting someone warmed up in the bullpen. No one started warming up in the bullpen until it was first and second and one run was already in. That's too late.
You know, it's crazy that we're talking about such bullpen issues on a week. This is the week that we actually should be good.
Right.
We should be rested. We have 2 days off in this week. We've been playing like consecutive games after consecutive game because of all of these rainouts and doubleheaders and all this crap. Like, these guys have been playing with no issues really as much with the bullpen until we have 2 days off. Then all of a sudden there are these things that come up. The problem here is that if you're trying to take Lynn out at that point when you immediately see that he's gassed and you're trying to get somebody up, who are you going to at this point? Because you're going to have to pinch hit for them, or they're going to hit in the next inning. He's literally running into a body issue at that point. So I think the decision is, can Lynn get out of this? Can he manage the rest of this inning and get out of it so that we can pinch hit for him? And then we have two more guys to go for the rest of the game. You know, that's one of the decisions to make at that point. And I mean, I understand. I see what he's trying to do there. To me, Lance Lynn is a guy that, you know, he's a big hoss guy. You're trying to stretch him as long as possible. Just didn't work out. He left the ball over the plate and got tagged up.
So then Cashman needs to give Boone a better bench when he's in the National League. You can't have the bench be Voit, Robinson, and Torres with Higgy as your backup catcher. They had Chapman go on the DL, and instead they called up Chance Adams, who I know pitched in the game. But did you really need Chance Adams to come up? Because Sonny Gray could have provided that sort of mop-up duty that Chance Adams did. Why not call up another bench player just for this one game?
See, I'm on the opposite side. I think they need more pitching right now. Because the other thing is Sonny Gray's pitching on Sunday because of a damn doubleheader. Well, I mean,
but it would have been Chance. But what I'm saying is, if you didn't call up Chance Adams there and you called up a bench player, then Sonny Gray would have pitched in mop-up duty last night, which is fine. And then you have Chance Adams for the doubleheader on Saturday instead of Sonny Gray.
Yeah, but you're down D-Rob. You're down Chapman. You needed another pitcher. The whole reason why Lance Lynn was left in that game is because there were no options in the bullpen. It had nothing to do with who was on the bench at that point. It had everything to do with who was available in the bullpen and how he could get through this game with the pitchers. Because otherwise, you got someone coming in and throwing, trying to throw strikes as a position player. Because there's just no options. Like, to me, right there, he was so underwhelmingly... He had nothing to go to as far as his pitching staff. He was screwed. He was in a horrible situation because of who was unavailable. And with D-Rob being unavailable right now, you have a guy that's there, but he's not available. So now what do you do? You know what I mean? Like,
when's the last time Robertson pitched?
It was Toronto, right?
Was it in the Toronto series?
So you're running into a problem there where Aaron Boone is... You know, used to have an embarrassment of riches in the bullpen, and now he's looking down the barrel of Lance Lynn, who's gassed and has to get through the sixth inning because there's a hitting situation because we're playing in the stupid National League where he's going to have to either pinch hit or get killed because he has some reliever hit at that point when you're down. He's in a no-win situation right there. The team did not allow for him to go out there and have a good option for somebody to come in the game.
He last pitched on the 17th, which was the Friday rain-shortened game against Toronto, which means it's been 6 days. So it'll be 7 days once they get to Baltimore. I mean, are they going to keep resting him?
At that point, you might as well
retroactively.
Exactly.
You could retroactively DL him at that point and only miss a couple days at that point.
Knowing that you're going to be in a DL in the National League situation where you're going to have to do some of these double switches and you're going to need extra bodies, they should have done that. Yeah, they should have done it.
I get the body. Like I said, I get the body issue that the lack of bodies that Boone was dealing with. I get the logic behind leaving Lynn out there. But what I'm saying is once you try that and you see it's not working, you have to be quicker to react. You can't let it get to a point where now I have to leave Lance Lynn in there to face Rojas because no one's ready in the bullpen. And boom, give up a two-run homer.
Yeah, no, I agree that you should be ready and prepared. It's just that he was in a situation where he was going to be screwed. It really was a bad spot. Because if you bring Canley in there and then you have to pinch hit for him, you know, then you have Chance Adams for the rest of the game and you have no other option.
Right. You may be screwed either way because Canley came in and didn't look good and Chance Adams came in and didn't look good. So you might have been screwed either way.
He was screwed. It was in a tough spot.
We're talking about the Marlins, though.
Yeah,
you got to beat the Marlins. You should not be screwed. You should be able to beat the Marlins with a hand tied behind your back. I understand the Yankees have a hand tied behind their back right now, but you got to beat the Marlins still.
Here's one of the bigger issues. How about we score some runs against the Marlins? How about we get into a position like this where we're actually, you know, scoring runs and giving the pitching staff an opportunity where they don't have to be perfect out there and you know they can make some more mistakes or they can have at least a little bit of a cushion. But the bats didn't do a goddamn thing. Pretty much this and you know for when they were in Miami, it was a problem.
Right. They lit up the Toronto staff and then came down to Miami and forgot how to hit.
And you know the Miami Marlins walking in with one of the worst ERAs bullpen wise in baseball. And the Yankees can't do a damn thing. So, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around. People are going to blame Boone because it's an easy thing to do. And when a team's not going right, you look at the manager and, you know, there's a lot of good reasons for that. But at the same time, you know, this team has to pick itself up in other situations. That's how they were winning so many games early in the season. When the pitching staff was good, a lot of times we didn't see the offense. When the offense was good, they were picking up the pitching staff because they weren't at their best. And this team right now is not picking up each other at all. We're not seeing that. We're not seeing them go out there and play inspired baseball. And yes, Pedro made an observation saying that they're not the same team. No, they're not the same team. Aaron Judge is not playing. Gary Sanchez is not playing. Didi Gregorius, not playing. A guy that would be able to come up here right now and play right field and all of these issues would be done. Clint Frazier is not playing because he has still a head issue. Like this team is beat up and is going through some major adversity right now. And they got to squeak out of it because, you know, the road right now in front of us is about to get very difficult.
Right, because in early September, they're going to Oakland for 3 games and then Seattle for 3 games. And Oakland right now is 3.5 back of the Yankees. And if you're not healthy and playing better by that time, what happens if Oakland sweeps you? Now you're looking at having to go on the road for the wild card. And that would be a total nightmare.
It would be a total nightmare. And I mean, look, I'm also, these teams are good now. You know, there were times when the Yankees were struggling going out west just because it's a West Coast trip. But now you're going out there and, you know, the majority of those teams are good. And they're playing some inspired baseball.
Oakland's
they have a bunch
hottest
of
team
young,
in baseball.
They have a bunch of young guys that got nothing to lose at this point, and they're playing phenomenal. So, yeah, it's going to be a very tough spot. And if you're trotting out there, Shane Robinson in right field and, you know, some of these other guys like Voit playing first base against a lefty, which is, at this point, ridiculous if that happens, then yeah, you have a tough road. So they gotta do something.
Hopefully, the Yankees will have Gary Sanchez back by that West Coast trip because he's scheduled to play in Gulf Coast League games this weekend, and then he's going to move up, I believe they said, to Scranton to play a couple rehab games, and that should put him in line for coming back in early September. Judge, on the other hand, is still not going to be back. He has not even swung a bat yet. He went on the DL on July 26th. They said 3 weeks. Obviously been more than 3 weeks.
Yeah, and Cashman's come out
Cashman
there and said it. Yeah.
Cashman admitted he was on the radio. He admitted they underestimated the timeline for Judge, and they're just looking to get the strength and mobility back in his wrist before they actually start having him swing. They haven't got there yet. But I'm now saying we're going to be looking at him coming. If he comes back, we're going to be looking at him coming back for middle of September, which gives him 2 weeks to really get ready for the wild card game. Are you comfortable with that? Like, give 2 weeks with him just getting some game action? Is it going to be cutting it close on this timeline? What happens if he comes back and he's not the same player? There's a lot of stuff going on with this Aaron Judge injury.
Yeah, and they're not going to rush him. They're not going to, if he doesn't feel right, they're not going to, he won't come back. I mean, there's absolutely a very possible situation where we don't see Aaron Judge again for the rest of 2018. And if he doesn't feel 100% in that wrist, they're not going to push it. They're just not going to. They're not going to, you know, potentially put something at risk for a long-term situation for Aaron Judge for coming back for the last month. Clint Frazier is improving. We saw reports out of that from Brian Hoke saying that he's starting to feel better and they're ramping up his baseball activities. So he could be an option coming up, you know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks if he continues to progress and gets all the baseball activities underneath him and is ready to get back. So that could be a big situation. But again, you just don't know because these, you know, for him, especially the concussion symptoms have come back even when after he's played for a little while. So he's such a wild card right now. I think one of the big things for him is he's going to need is an off season to really just get some R&R. So.
Yeah. I don't even know if they bring him back at all this season. They might just tell him, listen, unfortunately it's a lost year for you. You got to get your head right. Just go home, sit in a dark room between now and next February.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to mess around with him either with this. But again, he's saying he's feeling better and they're ramping up baseball activity. So that at least is encouraging news for the Yankees and for Clint Frazier.
And you mentioned a body issue in the bullpen. Well, Justice Sheffield's going to help him in September because they moved him, shifted him to the bullpen in AAA. Cashman said the plan is for Sheffield to make 3 or 4 relief appearances to get him ready for a September call-up out of the bullpen.
Yeah, is it September yet? I mean, do we have are we there yet?
Well, everyone has been calling for Justice Sheffield for a month at this point as a starter. Yeah. And now we're going to probably get him as a reliever.
Right.
We said this is a possibility from a while ago, just because of the innings limit that's probably going to be on him.
Yeah.
So do you think are you disappointed with the fact that they didn't have him pitch at all as a starter this season over the last month?
No, because I didn't expect it. Again, I talk a lot about expectations. I didn't think that he had a chance to come up and pitch as a starter because of the innings limit. They're going to, again, this is another one of those guys that they have as a highly touted guy and they're not messing around with him. So they didn't, They're definitely they have an innings limit on him. He had an injury last year, so they're playing it safe with him, I think. And if they see what they want to see out of the bullpen, then he'll be an option. But he's got to be able to throw strikes. That's been his biggest issue so far in the minor leagues is throwing strikes. And obviously, you know, if you're going to come in high leverage situations down the stretch with the Yankees out of the bullpen, you better damn well be able to throw strikes. And I think he had a relief appearance either last night or the night before. And he did, he threw well and had a clean outing. So if he could do that, I hope he can, because he could absolutely help this team right now. He could definitely help his team. If he can prove that he can go in there and throw strikes, he's an arm that can definitely help. And he's a lefty arm. So, good stuff that it'll be a nice little jolt in the arm to see some of these guys come up. Unfortunately, we don't have many of those position players. They're going to light light the scene on fire unless we have a Shane Spencer situation where, you know, like a what's his face? McDreamy or whatever his name is coming up. And McBroomy is going to come up and light it up in right field. Like, he's an outfielder. How about we bring him up instead? He's got some pop.
Do you think we're going to get some justice rules like we got Jabba rules?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
I have nightmare flashbacks from that. All right, Yankees are going to Baltimore for four games, the doubleheader on Saturday. Here's a quick recap of how the Yankees have played in doubleheaders this season. They split with Detroit on June 4th. They split the game-and-a-half makeup situation with Washington on June 18th. They split with Baltimore on July 9th, and they split with Kansas City on July 28th. Do you see a trend here?
Yeah, Sonny Gray, how many times did he pitch in those doubleheaders?
Well, Sonny Gray has won the three of his like seven wins as a starter against the Orioles this season.
Yeah, so there's a trend in that they can't close the deal. Can't win two games, John. Just baseball. It's hard to do that, especially when you have Sonny Gray pitching. No confidence.
Baltimore is on pace to go 48-114, which is an inverse of the Yankees' 1998 season.
Yeah, that's bad. Hopefully they can contribute to that a little bit further. The Yankees got to beat this team, man. The Baltimore Orioles are just a shell of themselves right now. And I know we're saying that about the Marlins as well, but when you go into Baltimore and it's a bandbox and you're dealing with a bunch of guys who are not major league players, you know, on the offensive side or on the pitching side, you got to beat that team. They're worse than the Marlins by a lot, I think, right now. You got to beat that team. I don't care where you're playing the games.
Okay, let's final segment. Let's shift gears a little bit. Because the Yankees were down in Miami, we got a lot of Derek Jeter, the CEO stuff. And there was a big article on ESPN last week about him, which was actually a really interesting article, I find. It kind of took us through the mentality and the process, the hashtag process that Derek Jeter is trying to implement there in Miami. And then we got that interview with Meredith Marakovich on Yes, where he said, "I'll always be a Yankee and the captain." Which I'll
always be the captain.
I think gave Yankees fans around the world a raging boner.
Yeah, and apparently everything just goes down on that.
what just happened over there, Scott?
Things are happening. No, yeah, when he says that, it's like, you know, this is the guy. I'm like, okay, we thought we lost you for a second, but then you just did that, Derek. You just did that. No, it's it was really, I thought it was very interesting. It was a good interview by Meredith. And I thought that he was, you know, very wide open with what he's doing down there. And then again, you read that article from ESPN, and he's wide open. He's trying to turn the Marlins into the Yankees. That's what's happening right now. He sees the fact that the culture in Miami is non-existent. And I think that's one of the biggest things. When you're looking at what the Yankees have right now, there's an undeniable culture of winning. And while the Marlins don't have the winning part of it, they have a couple World Series that are mixed and sprinkled in there. And you could probably hang your hat on those a little bit. But there's no culture of you know, doing things the right way from top to bottom. And I think that's what Jeter's trying to do.
That was my main takeaway from the ESPN article, is that the Jeter came into that organization, took it over from Loria and that team, and he was like, holy crap, they do everything the wrong way. Whether it's on the field, front office, clubhouse, scouting. They were talking about how they didn't have proper food in the clubhouse, and clubhouse attendees weren't getting tips, and the minor league facilities were garbage. And he was basically was just saying, everything is wrong about this situation. I need to change everything from the ground up. So he got himself in there, and he's like, oh, God, I got a lot of work to do here.
I mean, even if you think back to when we had Billy McKinney on the show last year, and we were talking to him about the differences in camps, because he was with the Cubs, he was with the Oakland A's, and then he comes over to the Yankees. And we've actually talked to a couple of those guys who have said this, where the Yankees are very regimented in what they do. They have plans. There's a schedule. The food is ridiculous. So I think the Yankees are an outlier with the way that they do things because of you know, obviously the fact that they have so much winning in their history, they tier things up. Like, they're the gold standard when it comes to baseball organizations or sports organizations, really. So there's a difference in the way that they handle things. And I think it was very evident in the way Jeter was talking about even tipping clubhouse guys, like stuff like that. When you have people that are happy in the clubhouse and people who are taking care of you, then it just permeates through the walls of a good atmosphere. And everybody around you, if everybody around you is happy, it's a better atmosphere, bottom line. And when they know you're getting taken care of, there's just something to that. And I think that when he saw that, you know, there was kind of disarray in the Marlins organization, And, you know, I don't know if it's total flux and it was just a, it was done terribly, but it was done very differently than what the Yankees are used to and what Jeter's used to with the Yankees. And I think that's, you know, when you're looking at an A lineup and an F lineup, as far as food and situations with, you know, with the setup of the facilities, you know, it's a big difference. And Jeter saw that.
Isn't the food thing, doesn't it amaze you that there's organizations out there that don't focus on something so easy as the food? It's like, we have all of these players that we're investing money in. Like, you go out and buy a Porsche and then you're going to put the cheapest oil you can find in it?
Right.
No. Why don't you take care of your Porsche and make sure that the insides are working as well as the outsides? It's like, how does that get overlooked in a professional organization?
Yeah, I mean, something as simple as the food, but I mean, there's just so many different detailed aspects, and you're definitely, if you read this article, you could see how much Jeter is really trying to get his hands dirty. I mean, talking about the promotions, the music, different elements, right, about the in-game entertainment, he's getting
focused
in the dirt.
On in-stadium entertainment. Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, I love it. I absolutely love it, because one of the big takeaways when I was listening to the interview with him and Meredith is he said that, you know, he likes to build things, and that's one of his passions. He likes to go in and build. And we saw that with, you know, with Jeter and the Players Tribune. I mean, he took that from nothing, from an idea of something that was so foreign to everybody who knows Derek Jeter in the media. And he built it out to this, what now is a thriving organization that, you know, he had probably something to do with the beginning of it. And I'm sure he's in like high level meetings. But, you know, he built things like that. He put a template into play with the help of an solid inner circle. And now you're seeing a good organization. So I like the fact that he's down in the weeds and trying to, you know, make sure that everything is good from top to bottom, because that's important. Details are important.
And he's doing the captain's camp, which is a carryover from the Yankees. Mike Lowell and Alfonso Soriano were some of the speakers for the Marlins this year at captain's camp. They're taking language classes. He says we need to learn all the English, English-speaking clubhouse people, front office people, as well as players need to learn Spanish and vice versa. All the Spanish-speaking players need to learn English, because that's the only way there's going to be open communication.
Yeah.
They're in a city that has a heavy Latin influence, so he's trying to bridge that gap.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, you talk about the captain camp, but he's also bringing back a lot of his buddies. You're seeing Tino in the box with Jeter quite often. You're seeing Jorge come back. You're seeing a lot of the guys that he played with have some kind of an influence, and I'm sure he's using them as consultants, in the sense that he's you know, ping-ponging ideas off of these guys and say, hey, do you remember this? What did we do here? What did we do here? How did the Yankees handle this? How did the Yankees handle that? So he's got a lot of support, I think, with the guys that he played with and what he's trying to build down in Miami. So it's interesting to see it, and I think it'll be interesting to watch the progression of how that organization you know, moves forward and does things. And I think it's okay as a Yankee fan to look at that from, because there's such a distant, they're so far away, and you know, they're in the National League, and it doesn't, they'd be competing with the Mets, so that's something to pull for. You know, maybe they'll take over the NL East. But it'll be very interesting to see how that organization changes over the next 5-10 years.
And also, you mentioned he's bringing in his buddies. Gary Denbo, who's from the Yankees organization, yeah, is the head of scouting for the Marlins.
Right, right. Yeah, so, you know, I think that's one of the other reasons why Stanton was such a big, they had such an influence on Stanton, because Denbo knew the entire, you know, minor league system when you're talking to these guys. So there was a lot of familiarity between these two teams, and that's not a bad thing when you have friends on other teams.
Don't you still think, though, the biggest hurdle for them is going to be the lack of fan interest in South Florida and in Florida in general for outside baseball teams? You have so many transplants. Like, if you just look at Tampa, Tampa has been a respectable team for 10 years, and they don't sell shit.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that there's no culture for the fans to really latch onto either. I think if you establish some type of a culture and you can get them on board, there's still a lot of people in Miami who are there and who grew up there. And like you talked about, there's a huge Cuban influence in Miami as well. Like there's a lot of people that you can absolutely start getting to better and get them as diehard fans. And what the Yankees have always done is they've started, young. Like, you got to start these fans out. The kids that are growing up in Miami right now, like, those are the kids that you need to start targeting and get them to be diehard fans. Because obviously when they grow up and they start going to games more often and they tell their parents, hey, I want to go to a Marlins game. I want to go to a Marlins game. And then you know, that's how you could progress and you get generations of fans, is when you start them super young. So I think Jeter understands that. And that's, you know, one of the big focuses they'll try to do. So, but there's still a big population in Miami, still a major market. It's bigger than, you know, when you're looking at where Tampa is. Tampa's got other issues too. Miami to me is an interesting spot because they have a new facility. You know, now there's a new culture with Derek Jeter leading the charge. So you could definitely get a lot of people, I think, on board with that.
Do you feel that Derek Jeter has distanced himself from the Yankees organization over the last 5 years?
Yeah, for sure. But he did that before he was with the Marlins.
Do you care?
No, because I think I expected it as well. I expected Jeter to go and retire and not show up in front of the Yankees for a while. Maybe occasionally.
Why do you think he did that?
Because I think that's the only way for him to completely move forward in his life. He'll always be, like you said, he'll always be a New York Yankee. He'll always be the captain, which I thought was interesting because he doesn't really ever refer to himself as the captain.
No, I understand. Like when he said, I'll always be a Yankee, yeah. I was like, yeah, I've heard that before. Then he said, I'll always be the captain. He gave a little smirk. He's like, oh shit, I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, exactly. I was surprised he said that too because that was something I don't remember ever hearing out of his mouth. But yeah, no, I mean, I think he's always been a private guy. So I think that I expected him to be way more private. I think everybody was shocked when he came out and said, I'm starting the Players Tribune. We're like, what? You're starting an organization where the athletes talk to the, as media? I mean, right. Fundamentally, when you think about it, it kind of makes sense where they're dictating their terms.
But he never says anything. He never said anything,
but when he did, he dictated the way he did it, right? Like it wasn't, It was on his rules. It was on his accord.
So, and he had that publishing company too. So he was doing a bunch of stuff in that first couple of years.
Yeah. And the publishing company was for, it's all kids books.
Yeah. So, I don't even know what happened with that.
But. It's still doing it. He still has it. I have like five of the books sitting in my,
Kemp's. Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of the Jeter books. Like they were given as gifts and I've seen them.
Jeter insert in the cover or something like that?
There's a kid that is basically Derek Jeter. Yeah. There's a whole Yankee theme to all of them. So again, that goes down to, Kemp is going to be reading these books. I'm going to be reading these books to him as, you know, he's going to be taking these characters through their stories and they're Yankees and their kids growing up, you know, rooting for the Yankees. So if you don't think Derek Jeter's publishing agency is going to start coming out with some Marlins books that have to do with the kids, you're crazy because that's what he's going to do. He's going to get to the young kids.
You know who looked pissed off is Hannah Davis. She looked agitated. To be there. She's like, oh God, I thought I was going to, you know, marry Derek Jeter at the end of his career and he was going to have all his time for me and our baby. And instead, he went and became the CEO of a friggin' baseball team.
No, see, I think it's different here. This is my take. I'm like, I bought the Yankees and now I'm given the Marlins. I thought I was getting myself into the Yankees organization. Like I'm getting like the guy in the Yankees organization and now he's not doing anything with the Yankees organization and I'm stuck with the Marlins. This is the team that I have to watch every day in the box. Yeah, it's bad.
Yep.
She didn't want to be there.
You thought you were buying Coca-Cola stock. Instead you got like the generic store brand cola.
Yeah. You're drinking RC Cola at that point, and it's flat.
Right. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode. Yankees, like I said, heading to Baltimore. Want to see a strong series there. And it's less about, honestly, my feelings right now. Once the Yankees got swept in Boston, I said the division is unrealistic. Just start playing well and get healthy for the one-game wild card. That's all I'm looking for now. We just need to start seeing this team play better is the bottom line, I think.
Well, I mean, health is the number one thing for that. I think they need to get healthy. Bottom line is they need to get healthy. And when you get your bodies back, when you get your players back, naturally you're going to start playing better. But I mean, I'm still on the sense that, you know, we have a week plus left in August. If they could continue to win some games and they have winnable games in front of them, and then they have that West Coast trip, you know, and let's just see what happens. Pick your head up and see where
always
you are.
Always the
in
optimist,
beginning.
Scott. Always
gotta be.
The optimist.
I mean, there's nothing else to be at this point. You have to look at the glass half full. You try because you're looking at what this team is, and it's very easy to be negative when you look at the players who are left standing right now. But at the same time, you know, there's reserves on the way. They're getting healthy, and you know, there's still an entire month of baseball to play in front of us. So.
All right, our next episode is on Monday. We're going to be doing mailbags as well as voicemails on that show. So submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast or tweet us at Yankees Podcast and post them in the Facebook group. It's the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. And also light up the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. We will talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.